This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. Once again, this is the Spring Sessions with my man Pierce Nellis from the Wisconsin podcast, the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast. If you haven't been listening to our Spring Sessions, I highly recommend it. Lots of breakthrough content on that. I mean, we are just
earth shattering.
We are turning over every stone in the creek bed for this one. I mean, just the things that we've talked about have been like, probably if you listen to them, you're probably going to have your best year ever.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. If you haven't, I can almost guarantee tag soup. Come this fall. Yeah.
It's remember when podcasting used to be like that until people started to realize that, like, or even the articles. When people started to realize that every first week of November, the same article came out in the same magazine, the same date, the same, like, and then people were like, wait a second, people noticed this. And then it's just like, I don't know, man. I would get a kick out of how the hunting industry used to be, where it's like, have your five tips to having your best season ever. Yep. And it was always the same thing, just came to like reworded.
Yep. Yeah, 100%.
And that's that's how podcasts used to be. I still do it every once in a while, basically for the old bait and switch, where I will put a title up there where it's like five tips for the best rut ever, and then not talk about deer hunting at all in it.
Yep.
So just really piss people off. Just really piss people off. That's probably not a good like strategy to getting people to listen to the podcast.
I don't know, man. I feel like in this day and age, if you're going to take the bait on the five tips for whatever success, I think you kind of deserve it at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I follow this guy on the internet. You know, there's these guys out here. I don't know what you would call them. They're like ultra influencers, and usually it revolves around real estate or fitness, and they're usually jacked, heavily tattooed, like just, you know, like they drive Lambos or Ferraris, they take pictures in parked planes, and you know, they're just like, by the time I was 20, I had 17 rental properties. By the time I was 30, I was making $1 trillion a day by noon, you know, like I follow the guys who make fun of those types of guys. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Ambition and hard work is awesome, but also humor is awesome.
100%, dude. I don't know. 100%. Which one actually makes you happier?
Yeah. What do you laugh at? What are some things that make Pierce laugh?
Oh, dude. I don't laugh at them, but I've recently entered the stage of life where like my folks will send me, they're newer to the social media scene. And so they'll send me like some animal video or some video of something, whatever. And it's just like, I'll look at it and I'll be like, this is evidently AI. And yet they're like, well, no, look at this video. Like this bobcat and her three kits like came up to this house, and then this guy took them into their garage and took care of them. And then 6 months later, here's all these bobcats in his backyard came back to thank him. And like, I don't know, dude, it's those ones crack me up for sure. But
oh yeah. Like my favorite is the one of a dog falling out of a truck going really fast, but landing on its feet and running alongside. And then you look at the comments and it's just like, how'd that happen? It's like, there are people out there that do not know that AI exists yet, and it can do whatever you want it to do. Like entire movies redone.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the guy who put himself in Top Gun, and he put himself in all of the, like a lot of the 80s action movies? And it looks,
but that's a good use of AI.
And it looks real. Like he's having the sex scenes with all the hot models too. Like just, oh, dude. I mean, that's drawn, what AI should be made
somewhere,
for.
Somewhere, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. I was literally just before I came down, chatting with my girlfriend about, like, I saw a thing and, that was like, we used to say this photo is clearly Photoshopped.
Yeah.
And now we jump to this is clearly AI, but like the Photoshop era is dead.
Yeah. It's dead. Man, I'll tell you, I'll be completely honest with you. I don't know if you've ever seen like some of the thumbnails that I use for the How to Hunt Deer podcast or even the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. The AI, and I use AI to like, and I'm like, create a 1:1 aspect ratio. So basically a square of podcast thumbnail for this episode. And usually it's like me, but it doesn't look like me at all. It looks like it could be my brother or my uncle or, you know, like somebody that's somehow related to me, but doesn't look like me at all.
Yeah.
I was going to kick off that out of that. I'm just like, I like rolling with this. I used to pay people to do logos and stuff. Now, dude, you don't even need to do that anymore. So like the graphic designers, I bet you they're taking a hit, dude.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Big time, dude. There's like, that's definitely an area I was thinking about that like, unless you're really good at the camera, like I can see the, I guess the artistic edge that you would have and that you'd be able to create your own stuff. Cause you have to be out there shooting it. And then you can use AI to like edit photos or like, you know, tweak some of the footage, whatever you're doing. But yeah, graphic design on that front, dude, like I don't know how you have an edge. Oh, man. In this day and age, unless you're just kind of relying on folks
I mean, all you have to do is take an image of something you like, put it into AI and go, give me a version of this, but with my brand, or give me a version of this. And right now there's people rolling over going, oh, the creativity, like that's ripping people off or whatever. I'm just like, no, it's not, dude. No, it's not. Like,
somebody created it.
Yeah. If it ever comes down to it and all of a sudden the government's like, hey, dude, are you pro AI or anti AI? We need your input on it because we're going to vote if AI should be dismantled or not. Are you pro AI or anti AI?
Dude, at this moment, I would say anti only because I don't know. See, that's the thing, because I've run through these scenarios in my head, Dan. That's the thing. If we were to put some sort of a limit on AI, we still know, just like in any other aspect of society, when you try and restrict something, you make something illegal, you're still going to have some bad eggs that are using it.
Yeah.
And they're going to use it or be able to use it in theory to their advantage to, you know, potentially do some unsavory things. And I don't know. I don't. Yeah. I think the toothpaste is out of the tube at this point, and I don't know.
That's one hell of a metaphor, my friend.
I don't know, dude. I don't know how we get back from this one. Yeah. See that? Here's what's really going on, Dan. I haven't been watching the stuff that makes me chuckle. I've been going down the rabbit holes and getting all paranoid.
Yeah.
That's been my.
But how crazy is it? How crazy is it that the Terminator movies are literally becoming more of a reality every single day?
Yep.
Right. Have you seen the AI and the robotics that, I don't know, like there's a robot that it goes into a fight with a human, and the human has one goal, just to knock it over. And the human, like one-on-one, can't knock it over.
Jeez.
The robot doesn't like attack it or anything. The guy just gets to kick it and punch it, and it doesn't get knocked over. So imagine if you start at, like, putting attack modes, or you put blades on it, like a knife, give it knives or a weapon. Game over, dude.
Yeah,
and they're already like, drones. Have you seen the footage of like the war in Iran of these drones chasing people down in thick timber, like dodging trees and stuff, and then going and blowing them up? It is bananas what technology is doing in wars today.
Yeah, dude, it's spooky because that's another thing. It's like, I don't know. Like, once you've got the drones, why would you use anything else? Mm-hmm. You know, don't have to, you know, use your own infantry or your own soldiers to like get into that area, like just fire up the old remote and let that thing buzz on in there. And if it goes down, it goes down. You're out a couple $100, but like,
these are military drones.
Oh, military. So you're
we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Thousands. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. I don't know, dude. You feel like the number of those things they have to go through.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even want to know
And that's why the United States government spends trillions of dollars every single year on military spending or whatever the number is. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
You got to keep
realistic. Yeah. Realistically, how many years? Take a guess, just a guess. How many years are we away from Dan Johnson sitting on a couch wearing some goggles with a remote control, flying a drone with an arrow attached to it or a bullet attached to it and hunting deer?
Oh, dude.
Like, is that even a possibility at this point? But
I bet 50 years.
50 years out.
Yeah.
And hunting becomes remote.
I don't know.
Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/chronicles and use NFC25 for 25% off your first order. Trollco. For the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code NFC at checkout for 20% off on all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
That's going to be a tough hill to get over, dude.
Yeah.
That'll be a really tough hill to get over. I think.
But there's people out there who want to make money off of it.
Right. Minimum 20, max 50.
So you're thinking in the next 20 to 50 years.
Yeah.
Before we're dead.
Somebody's going to.
I'm not living for 50 years. I'm not going to be alive in 50 years. But in 20, when I'm 65, there could be. Just imagine what's going to happen. Like, look at the advancements just on the deer side, right? Cellular trail cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was even before trail cameras? Like the advancement on materials for broadheads and bows and risers. Everything used to be aluminum, right? Trail cameras in general, right? Drones, like thermal drones, helping you recover deer, like. Fast forward another 20 years, there's going to be shit going on where you don't need to do, like, you don't need to be a woodsman anymore. Like, you don't need to have, like, even today, I don't even think you need to have woodsmanship. You don't need to even know what a rub is. I don't think you do. Like, if you handed, I'm sure you have some friends who are, they don't understand deer hunting, but if you gave them the task, here is, your goal, and you need to have it done within 1 year. Your goal is to shoot the biggest antlered buck that you can find, and you can use any legal method possible, right? Do you think, or like, let's just not even say biggest antlered buck. Let's just say a buck.
Mm-hmm.
And they start doing their research on trail cameras, on crossbows, on or high powered rifles or whatever like that. You don't even need to really know shit about deer movement anymore. You just kind of put the, like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to put a trail camera out on a trail.
And dude, then, honestly,
I don't know, man.
I think if you gave a cell cam to somebody who'd never done it before and you gave them those parameters, I think the cell cam would actually be a huge hindrance because I think they would lean too much into it off the bat, knowing that like, oh, well, this is supposed to help me gather inventory. I think they would leverage that too much. And there is still that element of woodsmanship where you need to know what's a productive place to put this camera and how should I have this thing mounted and like what is it a convergence of trails? Is it, you know, what are those trails leading to? Are they going to food? Are they going back to bedding? Are they just, you know, a big central hub?
Yeah.
And then on top, I don't know. I think, I think the cell cam would be more of a hindrance to a new hunter rather than like just going out. And if you were to give them a year and say like, hey, you've got a year to shoot a buck by whatever means possible, I think you'd be able, depending on where you're at, I'm picturing like southern Wisconsin ag country or like eastern Iowa ag land and stuff where you can, you've got the fields to your advantage.
Yeah.
I think you could, I think they could definitely get it done, but I think if they lean too far into that camera, they would definitely shoot themselves in the foot.
How far along, how far do you think we are until states like Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa turn into high fence operations where deer are no longer quote unquote free range and there's big fences of like 500 acres and dude, in that everybody is
pay to play.
It's either pay to play or it's I own this property, but I also own the deer that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, I could see Illinois doing it first, I think, just with their the way they run things in that state. I could definitely see Illinois being the first to do it. But at the same time, they also like seem to really just kind of not give a shit in the natural resource department. So who knows? I mean, it could be the kind of thing where somebody's like, well, it'd be a great idea if we could just throw a high fence up and you'd probably have some non-hunter out of Chicagoland. It's like, sure, sounds good to me. Go for it. And as long as we can taxi on it, go for it. But I don't know. I think they would be the first to do it. Unless there is some science-backed, now I'm picturing Wisconsin here, like some sort of a science-backed reason for trying to confine deer or wildlife. I think it'd be a really tough sell, but I'm picturing like if you could leverage the CWD thing,
that
would definitely open that door, I think.
Oh, well, we found a way to stop the spread of CWD, and that's make the deer herd captive on your properties, right? And all you have to do is put up a high fence around it, and then you have to take care of them. You still have to abide by all the rules and regulations in the state about tags and, you know, maybe it gets redone, but I could see something like that happening. Right. There's so many crazy thoughts that, you know, that could run through a head, you know, run through your head. I don't know. I just, this world is getting weirder by the day. And, you know, that overflows into all aspects of life, including the recreational side of things, hunting and what is legal and what is ethical and things like that. Because there's people out there who come up with a great idea. Like, have you seen the guy who has he calls it a Gatling gun or a Gatling bow?
Yeah. Yep. I have seen him.
But it ultimately is a gun that shoots arrows.
Yep.
That's what it is. And how long until something like that is allowed in archery season, like crossbows are, you know what I mean? Like it shoots a bow or excuse me, it shoots an arrow.
You'd like to think that they would at least restrict something like that, similar to like how they have hunting with like AR platform firearms, where like you can't use any sort of fully automatic whatever, like it would have to be a semi-auto.
Yeah.
I think I can't see something like that making it through the I think people would throw too much of a fit if that thing started trying to come to market during bow season, just given how pissed off people already get just about crossbows. I think if you throw something like that in the mix, they're going to lose their minds to an even fuller extent and have some sort of a restriction in there that because a compound or a crossbow, you still have to load each arrow individually. Like there'll be some parameter. It's like no auto loading crossbows or whatever it may be that
with crossbows with clips.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Hang on. I'm pulling something up real quick during archery season. Okay. I'm going to pull this up. I want to see, at least 29 states permit full inclusion of crossbows during the regular archery season. Okay. Here's the list. Alabama, Arkansas, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and Wisconsin. All of those states allow crossbows during the regular archery season. Full inclusion. Full inclusion.
Notice those are a lot of states that are heavily private landowner oriented.
Yep. Let's see here. Yeah, nothing really out west other than Nebraska. Yep. Right. I like that Iowa's not in there, dude. When did Wisconsin go to crossbows? How long has that been?
That's a great question. I want to say that was like for whatever reason, the first year that jumps out to me is 2013, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah. So now I'm looking at a map of where crossbows are, where crossbows are legal and not legal.
Yeah.
Okay. So it goes through here and it's all Eastern states, dude. Florida has legal for use in archery season on private land only. So public land in Florida doesn't allow it. And here's another one. This is crazy. Every state surrounding it, except for what state is that? Connecticut or Maryland? Let's click on it. Massachusetts. So Massachusetts is crossbows may be used by certain permitted handicapped persons by permit only. So that's crazy. Every other state surrounding it, crossbows are legal, except Massachusetts. And then Wyoming, you can use a crossbow. That's the only other state. The rest of the archery, like Iowa, and then North Dakota, and then Montana. Let's see. North Dakota, Montana, Oregon. No, excuse me. Washington, California, Utah, Nevada, Colorado, and New Mexico and Alaska all have no-gos. They are not permitted. They are legal in the firearm season. So they treat a crossbow more as a gun than they do an actual I guess a bow, right? And then all the ones that we've already mentioned are green. So I'm on the 10-point. The link took me to the 10-point crossbow. So obviously they're supporters of crossbows during whatever season and things like that. So that's a pretty cool map to see. And then there's one state, Oregon, is illegal. It says illegal hunting equipment. So in Oregon, you can't even use a crossbow at all, ever. Interesting. I wonder what the reasons crossbows are illegal. I wonder what the reason for that is. It's probably because it's a,
a crazy liberal state and their whack jobs in Portland. And
I was going to say, it's probably just like getting over the hurdle to add another means of take to a hunting season.
Yeah. That's nuts, man. Anyway, we've talked about crossbows a lot on this. Before we get into, I don't even know whatever we're going to talk about today. I do have to shout out the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles and, just a big thank you to them. I know right now people are probably not that interested in picking stuff up, but I strongly suggest you do, because you get ahead of the curve. A lot of these companies get really busy in August and September because they are overwhelmed with orders from, you know, everybody waits until last minute. Like I was talking to a guy, who runs a bow shop in a Shields All Sports in Iowa City. And I'm just like, when does it start getting busy for you guys? Thinking people in June, July, August are going to get their bows in and start doing that. He's like, dude, people don't even start coming in until people will buy their bows, set on them, and then wait till September or October to come in and get their bows set up and shot. He's like, dude, it's crazy. I would think that people would want to get them in earlier and start shooting in June or July, but not everybody's as serious as us, I guess.
Right. Well, I think that's just it. Yeah. Everybody talks the big game. Like, we're going to shoot your bow all summer and do all these 3D shoots and all that stuff. And then push comes to shove, it gets, I don't know. I think we all are guilty of at one point or another shooting our bows in the backyard. And we're like, it's probably just me. I'm just rusty. It's all right. Whatever. And then we start, you know, slinging more arrows and they're not quite going where we want them to. And we're like, I'll get it tuned up before the season. Don't worry. And then all of a sudden it's September and,
or it's the day before you're going to go hunting and you rip three arrows at a target at 20 yards and you're like, dude, I'm a killer. Yeah, I'm a killer. Right. Anyway, if you're looking for a badass broadhead, go check out wasparchery.com. These guys have been a partner of the Nine Finger Chronicles for a long time. And most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States. Love that about them. Wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. So we're kind of past turkey season. We talked about red dots here for the shotguns for the last, you know, couple months. Now we're looking at, you know, we're talking about bean fields. We're talking about spotting scopes and binoculars in the truck and what you're using to locate deer or scout deer or what you're going to be running on your pack for your chest pack for the upcoming season. So go check out the spotting scopes, the rifle scopes, the red dots, the binoculars, the rangefinders that Vortex Optics offers, vortexoptics.com. Next on the list, Code Blue Scents, real and synthetic deer urines, scent elimination products. I'm looking at my schedule here. I think I have a crack in my schedule coming up in June, and I'm going to go out to the farm. I'm going to set out mineral. I'm going to freshen up my Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kits, and I'm going to get the cameras out, like all that stuff. Get that done here pretty soon because I like watching deer grow velvet antlers. I don't know what it is. I love it. And that's why I do it. And then, so I'll pair my mineral sights. I'll pair my mock scrapes with a Reveal trail camera. These guys have some new technology coming out. I would say in August. I think the guy said August or September. Keep an eye out for that. Before this upcoming season, there's going to be some new things coming out. They've recently made some upgrades to their platform. They have the Habitat IQ app as well. So go visit tacticam.com/cameras, and then the Reveal app can be downloaded wherever apps are downloaded. So go check that out. And then my company, if you want a t-shirt to do deer work in, to mow your yard, to take your wife or girlfriend on a hot date, go check out fullsneakgear.com. Okay. Here's a question for you. Will you call me a pussy
Yes.
Okay. All right. So no matter what the question is, will you call me a pussy if I back my bow down to 65?
No,
you won't.
Nope. Okay. I don't care, dude. Okay. I shoot 65. I think
you do.
Yeah, dude. Okay. You gotta, Yeah, because you're tall too, right? Like you got a long draw length. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care, dude. As long as it shoots straight, who cares?
Dude, I'm going to get some friends though that when I tell them, you know, dude, I think I'm going to back my bow down to 65. I think they're going to make fun of me and they will call me a big puss. And I don't know. I'm trying to like knowing that I'm probably going to do it because of my left shoulder. I know it's going to be better for me. Okay. Also, like there's something about that 70 pound mark, right? It's crazy because you go too high, you go past that. I shot an 80 pound bow one year, dude, and it just buttered through shit. It was crazy how powerful that bow was. But then I had people be like, oh, you don't need that. You don't need that. You know, like, or, you know, like when Cameron Haynes had his bow tuned to, I don't even know, like a bow mark.
90 or 100 pounds.
Yeah, just something ridiculous. If you can do it, why don't you do it, right? And then people, they just got slaughtered. They're like, oh, God, you don't need that. You think you're better than us, shit? You know, like that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then you back it down to 65 and you get the opposite. That ain't going to kill a deer. You're a pussy. Like, come on, be a man. You know, like so people just hate to hate, right? Yep. And so I there's a thin line you got to walk there. I don't want to be embarrassed, but I also don't want to be too manly where people think it's like it's ego.
Right. I think if you drop around 65, that's, you're definitely safe there. If you're between 65 and 70, I think you're in that sweet spot. If you start creeping a little, if you go like a 62, I think folks are going to start like, there's something about, I couldn't tell you what it is. It's a 3 pound difference, but 62 sounds like, yeah,
weak.
You're a weenie.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But maybe I'll keep it at like 66 just so I'm not at 65. Like,
there you go.
I don't know. I don't know.
I think I'm like 67. Yeah.
Okay, 67.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. yeah, dude, I know that. And but here's the deal. Like, I have not shot. The last time I drew my bow back was when I shot my buck in November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was the last time I drew my bow back. And then, you know, with the knee surgery and the shoulder issues that I had this past summer, from a physical standpoint, dude, in a couple months, or I'm guessing another month, my knee is going to be fine to where I'm going to start being able to do way more things, right? But I'm literally, from a physical fitness standpoint, having to start from scratch. Like, I haven't lifted any weights. I haven't done any type of cardio. This knee thing is going to limit me on what I can and can't do from an exercise standpoint. Like, I'm going to have to revisit everything that I've been doing in the past. Like, I used to be an ego lifter. Like, oh, put all the weights on and force it up. And that's how, that's probably why I have shit knees. And that's probably why I have a bad shoulder, right? But now, you know, every doctor I talk to now is just like, yeah, you're going to have to change some things up. Do you lift or work out at all?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how many times a week?
I mean, lately it's been, my schedule's been out the window. It's kind of just whenever I can. When I'm not during like peak guide season, I'm usually in there, or I should say peak guide season combined with turkey season. I'm in there usually 3 to 5 times a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm going to just go to the workouts that help me in the field from now on. Like, literally, as soon as this knee gets healed, and, you know, like I've told everybody here, I've canceled my Western hunt this year. I'm not going to South Dakota and, or going to do any type of preference point hunt. I'm just going to let it heal. I'm going to hunt Iowa. I'm going to probably try to fill more Iowa tags this year. But outside of that, I just want to get my legs back stronger. And the doctor said, if you know, like, hey, man, that should not be an issue as long as you take care of it. And once you rehab it and get it strengthened, like yesterday, I did a leg extension and leg curls at my daughter's gym. And so I was able to do that. But outside of that, just like starting from scratch, building strength, you know, I should probably start doing some push-ups and some back exercises and things like that to get me ready for the upcoming season. But man, I'm not looking forward to starting from scratch, right?
Yeah, like, dude, mentally,
that's the biggest
tough spot to be in. Oh, yeah, man. Exactly. Just getting back in there, because you know that you're going to be super sore for that first week or two as you get back in there and start actually trying to like build that up. And like you said, there's the ego element of like, well, you know, I used to be able to squat or lunge or you know, whatever this much weight. And now I'm like literally rebuilding from ground zero, like I said.
Right.
That's a tricky, I don't know. It's a tricky spot to get over, but at the same time, I feel like when you get to that point and it's like start from, because I've had back issues and stuff. And so when you start from ground zero and you're trying to like get back into it, when you start with like just like super lightweight and just focus on like using the muscle groups that you are trying to hit and stuff, like sometimes in a weird way, that can definitely, I feel like, give you an even better workout than just going ham and slapping as much weight on there as possible.
Yeah.
But it's a fine balance, right? It's kind of like dropping the bow down to 60. Like people might look at you like you're a pussy. And so that's, I don't know. Luckily you got a big scar that, that'll explain the story for you a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I tell you what, one thing that I was kind of thinking about as I was walking up the steps, or what are my strengths and weaknesses in life, and not just bow hunting wise, is one of my strengths, dude, I'm telling you, I have two strengths that like just in my personality. One, I was blessed. I have been blessed with the ability to not give a shit what other people think about me.
Dude,
I'll tell you this, like my wife, she'll get embarrassed by me sometimes, or like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that out loud. Or, you know, I'm embarrassed because you did this or said this, and I don't give a shit. Right. Like that's who I am. It's what I do. My other, and I think this is what has made me a decent bow hunter throughout the years, is the ability to have patience. Right. Like those are two things, especially with my kids and my wife. If I didn't have patience, our house would be a disaster. Like I'd probably be divorced. There would be like insurance claims on the house. Like, I don't know. Just those two things, I think, are my personal strengths. What are your personal strengths?
Dude, I like those a lot. I would say, I think resiliency. Mm-hmm. I think like just being like when something, like whether it be like business or hunting or whatever, like kind of along the lines like the patience thing, like understanding that everything's a process and something goes wrong, not like throwing a huge fit and just being like, you know what, it didn't work today.
Yeah.
Here's what we gained from it. Let's figure it out tomorrow.
And we'll absolutely,
you know, take another swing at it.
Yeah.
Is, I don't know. I've kind of accepted the point where it's like I can devise as perfect of a master plan as I think I can, you know, figure out. And it rarely ever goes that way.
Right.
So I'm kind of like, here's my hunch. Here's the direction I'm trying to go. And however it plays out, that's, you know, we'll be ready to strike when the iron's hot. But aside from that, I'm open to whatever way this wants to play out.
Yeah, dude. How was your childhood? And what I mean by that is like, and the reason I'm asking these questions is when I was a kid, I was exposed to multiple divorces, very high pressure situations. And some of those high pressure situations kept coming when I was an adult. Like I've had multiple guns pulled on me where my butthole was like, uh-oh, like those types of moments. Mm-hmm. I've been in like car wrecks. I've dealt with, like I've seen death and illness. I've seen, and that's, death and illness is even like a slow process, but it's still high pressure situations. And so I feel like that played a huge role in knowing when to get excited about something or when to just be like, dude, it's going to work itself out. There's nothing you can do. Like to the point where I think this is where my wife gets really frustrated at me, is I'm almost too calm in certain scenarios where I've seen these things play out before. And I know that most of the time, 99% of the time, it's just wasted energy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Well, have you ever been exposed to like really high pressure situations throughout your life that have taught you like, oh, dude, this just doesn't matter?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned one of the things like, you know, people dying or something like that. Like I was definitely exposed to that. Like most of my grandparents passed away when I was sub 14 years old, probably. Yeah. And so it was like always, and we would go down there because like my folks would, you know, travel down to Eastern Iowa where we're at now and everything. And so it was like the, oh, we got to move grandma into a home or we have to help do this stuff. We have to, you know, grandpa's on hospice or whatever it may be. And so being exposed to that from a young age, and on top of it, we had rescue dogs, like we rescued basset hounds growing up and everything. And so we'd get these dogs when they were between usually like 6 and like 8 years old. And so you get them for 4 years or, you know, hopefully 6 years or whatever. Yeah. But then you're dealing with the health issues that come with that and everything. So I was very, I don't want to say desensitized, but very acclimated and given a very solid understanding of like, well, this is life and death and this is what happens and all that sort of stuff, to a point where now it's like, I can see it coming. I can come to terms with it. And I am for the most part, okay. Whereas like my girlfriend, for example, kind of like your wife, she's, you know, you start talking about a dog passing away or somebody passing away or whatever, and it's a much more difficult thing to come to terms with. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, like exposed to stuff like that. And like, I never, you know, home wise and everything growing up, like my folks were awesome. They're still together to this day, super supportive. I got in a lot of fights and stuff when I was in school and, you know, through sports and stuff. And whether that's through my own hardwiring or whatever, but, you know, hopped around schools a couple times and all that. And you know, stuff like that. Nothing ever like serious, no guns, no like crazy, you know, life or death situations like that, but you know, plenty of injuries, plenty of fights, stuff like that. And so I don't know, to a point where enough to give you a sense for like, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. That extra
this
sense
isn't
like
whatever's happening right now is not a big deal.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like growing up on a farm.
Yes.
Like my grandparents were babysitters. So cows were not pets. They were raised for food. Chickens got their heads cut off. They were raised for food. Pigs. Right. The ultimate one is dogs and cats were on the farm, but if they started costing you money, they got rid of them. And I can remember this story, and I think I've told it before, where my grandpa had a dog, and it was a really friendly dog to me and my brother and all the other grandkids. And well, at that time it was probably just me and my brother. But like if you pulled into the driveway, wagged his tail and all this stuff. Well, anyway, this dog would like hang out in the ditch of the farm. And one day the postman came and he went to go open the mailbox and the wind blew the mail out of his hand somehow, or he dropped it and it went into the ditch. And so he got out and he went into the ditch to pick up the mail. Well, the dog attacked him and bit him, and he had to have stitches on his hand. Right. Mm-hmm. So guess who had to pay for that? My grandpa, right? And then pay for any shots, because that's just a farm dog, right? Nobody takes care of a farm dog. Yeah. I don't even know if it had a collar on it, right? And so my grandpa went into the fridge that later that day, and he took a piece of hamburger and he rolled it up in a ball. And he's like, Daniel, come on, let's go. And he put me in his truck. And in the truck was a gun, this shotgun. And I'm like, I didn't think anything of it really.
Mm-hmm.
And
gun.
Yeah. He held the meatball out of the window and started pulling the truck behind the windbreak in the house. And the dog was following this. And he had already taken a tractor and dug a hole, threw the meatball in there, shot the dog, and then got in the tractor, covered it up. And I was like, that was like one of my best friends was this dog, right? And I was just like, his name was Sarge. That was his name.
Oh,
like
no.
A great dog. And then all of us, and then boom, just back of the head, killed him instantly, got into the tractor, covered him up, went about his business, right? Like,
how old were you?
I was probably, my brother was real little. So I'm guessing I was probably eight, second
Jesus
grader.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude. And I, like, I don't even know if I cried. I instantly, like, went into shock. And I can remember my grandpa getting back in the truck. And he said something like, this would have been like late 80s. And my grandpa said to me, that dog cost me $300 or something like that. And I'm just like, and so like, that's,
yeah, you're not going to reason with grandpa at that point.
Exactly.
You're 8 years old. You're not going to push back. And like,
exactly. And my grandma didn't say anything about it. Like nobody said. And so like, imagine being born, like being the definition of a man has changed so much since 1927 when my grandpa would have been born. And just like that kind of shit, just so acceptable. Right. I got, you know, and then you get to see, and that's a very long way of saying like, I can kill a deer without necessarily feeling a ton of remorse. You know what I mean? Like some people have this gigantic connection where it's just like, oh my God, I took the life of an animal. I get it. It is important, especially when you're kind of killing it for sport, but also food, whatever the case is. It's not like a cow, right? This cow, you raise cow, you know, you're going to kill them. Right. So I've been desensitized in some way over the course of my life to where, I don't know, someone who may have lived in a city and becomes a hunter has a deeper, I don't even know if it's a spiritual connection or the life of an animal means something different to them. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, that's an interesting, you're right. It means something different to them, whether that be just they have a different perception of like that animal's role on a landscape or the animal's role in, you know, us as hunters, like, you know, if we're going to hunt that animal or that deer, whatever, for food. We definitely look at it differently. Cause like I can relate to both sides of that. Cause early season when I'm like, I'm going to get a doe, this will be awesome. A lot of times I'll get in the woods and I'll have that doe and her two fawns come up below, like, you know, underneath me or whatever. And I'm looking at them and they've still got that like red, you know, kind of late summer coat and everything.
Maybe
like,
you could even still see the spots a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, maybe I should just wait for like a lone doe to come along or whatever. And like, I know it makes no difference. I know this doe is going to kick both of these fawns out in a matter of weeks. So like I can rationalize that, but I still have that sort of like, it just doesn't quite feel like that time yet.
Yeah.
Now come the 9-day gun season, come any of the antlerless hunts throughout the month of December, dude, it is like, it
green
is
light on all those.
That is meat and I need it badly. Let's go fire up. And yeah, totally different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it. And so like, that's where my daughter, she'll go and she'll kill a turkey. She doesn't care about that. My wife, I don't know. She's been married to me long enough now to know, like, there's no, I'm not going to change, right? I'm going to hunt. I'm going to go kill some animals, things like that. But she's got a, she still has like this extremely sensitive, especially deer, because deer are majestic and beautiful and gorgeous and things like that. And she's got she has a little bit of a problem with, and I think it's good that she doesn't get to see it, right? Like she's been hunting before and she's never killed a deer. We've tried to kill a deer with her before and she hasn't done it. But I'm trying to imagine the most, we've all been there, right? Like how she would react to a gut shot or a deer that gets livered or something where they're going to die. Like I've had a liver shot deer where he hunched up, tons of pain, and I watched him die over the course of like, dude, 25 minutes, yep. where he was just like blood just gushing, like the brutal and goriness of mm-hmm. that reality. It's not like, oh, I double lunged him, he ran out of sight, and I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And I think it's really important for people, for hunters, to see the brutalness, because eventually this isn't like a side of beef where you run him into a stall, you hit him on the head with one of those 22 caliber hammers or whatever they, you know, mm-hmm. they electrocute the
bolt
hogs
gun or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Bolt gun. Yeah. This is a more brutal way to kill animals, especially with archery equipment. Or if you have a bad shot in the guts with a gun or whatever the case is, it's going to take them a long time to die if you don't practice your. And so I think if she ever saw that, or she was part of it, like my wife still to this day is like, I want to go shoot a buck. I'm like, okay, let's go try to get you a buck, right? During one of the firearm seasons. And she would spine it, let's say, or gut shot it and just watch it sit there and struggle and suffer. Yeah. She would never, ever pick up a gun again, period. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think my daughter would be the same way. My oldest boy, I don't think he would give a shit. I think he would be like, oh, what's going on, Dad? He would have a lot of questions about it, mm-hmm. but not be turned off by it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. The first time I ever took my girlfriend hunting with me, we didn't get anything. The first deer that we got together, this little, I don't know, 2-year-old buck comes up kind of behind us. So like years ago, and comes in, and I'm like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Opening morning. I mean, why not? Let's mm-hmm. let one fly on it. And I hit it low, kind of, you know, left to right was great, but just low, like kind of, so basically like shot essentially through its sternum kind of mm-hmm. in that like low rib area there. A lot of blood, chunks of corn, all that stuff. Not a dead deer yet. Right. And dude, we tracked that thing for, I was like, I think I got him good. Like, you know, piece of cake. So we gave him some time, got down, went looking for it. And then it just like all that blood just slowly trickled out to like pinpricks and everything. And I was like, okay, let's give him another couple hours. Like, this sucks. This is not good.
Yeah.
And so then as we go back into the house, or as we're, you know, sitting around and everything, it's kind of like slowly dawning on her a little bit more that like, oh shit, this deer's not dead. And then it's like, she feels guilt. Mm-hmm. I feel guilt for not making the best shot and everything. And then eventually we, you know, caught up to that deer and got another shot on it and everything was fine. But it was a tough first deer for her to be a part of, for sure. Just from the standpoint of like, this didn't go smoothly. It wasn't that perfect double lung. And he went behind the bush and we heard a couple kicks and that was that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely eye-opening for.
Man, I tell you what, there's been a couple times where I've hit deer and I thought they, you know, like in 2016, I spined my buck and he dropped straight down in his tracks. I loaded another arrow, shot him, game over, right? And that maybe was like a 2-minute, 3-minute ordeal. However, I've had deer in 2018. I was in the process of taking off a raincoat when he showed up. So I had one, I grabbed my bow and my bow hand, I had a raincoat hanging off of it. And I drew back and I was hanging off, and this buck hard quartered away from me, and I tried to sneak it into his rib, mm-hmm. last rib, and it went to the right a little bit, which hit guts. So I like hit the crease in his back leg, and it still went through and it still killed him. But I took 2 days to find him. That one, I didn't get to see the suffering of that one. But the one that, I guess, if it was going to be like impactful to me, and how brutal sometimes it has to be to get the job done, my first mule deer I ever shot, which was a couple years ago, and I drew back and I had his head was down. He was feeding. I drew back And as I, like, right when I let the arrow go, he stepped down a little bit more and I spined him, right? And then he rolled out of sight. And so I loaded another arrow real quick and he went straight down kind of this cliff that I would have had to walk way around. It wasn't a huge cliff, but still I couldn't go straight down to it. So I got another arrow and he's flopping, like rolling around. And I, you know, it's not like he's just sitting there.
Right.
And I hit him in the guts and I'm like, God, one more arrow. And he's flopping around again. Boom. Kind of like a gut area again. I'm just like, Jesus. And finally he stops and I'm at 20 yards and I'm able to put another one like right into his heart lung area. And then that's the one that kind of sealed the deal on him.
Right.
He wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, man, the amount of blood and thrashing and noise, like, have you ever, I hit a button buck once and he just went like during the early season, I thought he was a doe coming in and he just went, dude, that's brutal, man.
Yep.
And I don't care how seasoned or desensitized of a hunter that you are. That's still kind of hard to listen to. And that mule deer was, dude, it was hard to, but you have to follow through with it, right? You don't get to turn your back and say, I'm just going to let you die over the course of the next multiple hours, right? Like, that's not fair to the animal.
Right.
You know? And so.
Well, that's like the beauty of, I mean, especially somebody who harvests their own meat. Cause like the same thing happens in a slaughterhouse where they bring the old bolt gun down. Oh, shoot, I missed. Like, you ever seen some of those, like,
oh yeah,
longhorn skulls that are out for sale or whatever, and they've got two or three holes in the forehead? Like,
damn, dude.
Not 100% science right there, I don't think. And so I think, you know, like, if we're talking about, you know, one of the arguments for hunting is like ethical meat sourcing, right? And you're gonna, you know, rather than eat some feedlot, you know, hog or chicken or cow or whatever that, you know, never got to step outside and, you know, basically was funneled into a gate and shot in the head and then through the machine, all that sort of stuff. Like, you're taking ownership of that. So it's like, in a way, I think some of that stuff just kind of comes with the territory. I mean, it obviously comes with the territory, but I think it's kind of like almost karma for, like, well, you are still taking a life, and like taking a life isn't pretty.
No.
But I'll
say this. It, even in the most difficult scenarios like that, where the kills don't go as planned, the reward on the back end of me, I don't know, like the other day, I was sitting downstairs, my kids were playing video games, and I in the man cave, and I was looking at my mule deer, and I was remembering the pack out, and I was remembering this story, and then also remembering the meals that I made with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, dude, there's something so rewarding. And this is for me anyway. There's something that's so rewarding of me sitting down and eating a meal of an animal that I killed, or my son, he shot his first deer this year, and we had it turned into like brats, and we had it turned into hot dogs and things like stuff that eats. And my son always asks, is this my deer, Dad? Is this my deer? I'm like, yeah, dude, that's your buck, or that's your doe you killed. And he's like, awesome. Like, he gets excited about that. And I think that's a pretty cool thing to be able to say, I did that.
Oh, totally, dude. Yeah. Especially, like, I mean, because I'm assuming you guys are cooking for the whole family and everything. For him to be able to, like, kind of pipe up and say, like, oh, yeah, like, we're cooking brats that are from my deer. Like, I did this one.
Yep.
It's not just, Dad's not the only one who's filling the freezer. Like, I chipped in for this one.
I did, And he's looking forward to doing it again, man. He's looking forward to doing it again. He wants antlers, though, this year.
Yeah.
Like, there's still this educational thing, though, that I got to teach him, where it's like, all right, buddy, big bucks just don't show up. With him, they probably would. And then I'd be
pissed. I was going to say, dude, you know, if he, youth weekend, you're out there, if he comes out there and, like, one of your hit listers walks out, are you giving him the green light?
Dude, I'll give him a green light on whatever he wants.
Hell yeah.
But I don't want it to ruin him, because I've interviewed a ton of people over the course of the last 10 years of podcasting, or 12 or whatever it is now, where I interviewed, and this one kind of resonated with me. I interviewed a guy several years ago who shot a 174 inch buck, his very first buck he ever killed. And he said that it took the fun away from him the next multiple years because there was no 170s. There wasn't even 150s or 140s. Right. He had kind of a freak show up. He shot it. It hangs in his house. And then he looked at it as a kid. I think he was 12 or 13 when it happened. And nothing excited him because it was so focused on the antlers. And maybe that was a parenting thing, or maybe that was just an expectation thing that maybe somebody didn't necessarily get to talk to him about. I don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I asked those questions in the interview, but man, imagine
what was your experience? And I guess as you're setting your son up in his early years of his hunting career and everything, because I think that's a very real balance that a lot of folks run into, where that one freak deer walks out, you know, early on in their career and they're like, oh my gosh, like I got that buck. And then like for me, it was, so I heard a lot of different comments and stuff from like friends' dads. Cause like my dad, he hunted, but not, he wasn't like into it. He kind of got into hunting, like as I got into hunting. And so we were both kind of trying to figure things out on our own as we were, you know, just hunting for more and more years together. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of my friend's dads saying like, oh, well, it's got to be bigger than the one you shot last year, or like whatever. And like that, for whatever reason, stuck out to me. And then I went 7 years where I just kept passing bucks and passing bucks and passing bucks and like didn't have a ton of fun until some random like 145 or whatever that came out, some big framey thing one opening day that got pushed over by the neighbor driving his truck through a field, and well, wait, 70 yards, here's this deer, and I shot him.
Yeah.
And it was like, great, got that buck, but it was all luck. There's nothing to it. And like I still, it's a cool looking deer, but I look at that deer now and I'm like, you didn't earn that deer. You know, you didn't like outsmart that deer. You were just in the right spot and the neighbor happened to push him at the right time.
Yep.
But there's like a weird, difficult balance of like, do you just keep shooting bucks after buck after buck and just like eventually your average is going to slowly go up over time, or passing deer? Know. Like, I don't know. It's a tricky.
Yeah, man. I don't
balance
know.
To strike, I think.
My boy, I'm just going to put myself. How I'm going to handle him. I'm going to tell him quantity is the most important thing. Don't think about age class. Don't think about buck or doe. Don't think about anything other than filling the tag, right? Like getting close to a deer is a win, right? It is a win. And so it's very important. If you're within shooting range of a deer, that's a win for you, right? If you get to shoot a doe, dude, take the shot, right? And then we can start thinking about bucks after maybe 3 or 4 years of shooting does. But I'm going to tell him, man, the more the merrier, because I didn't do that when I started hunting hard. When I was like 26 years old is when I started hunting hard. I hunted before that, but I didn't have any real guidance of what I should or should not be doing. And, I ended up going after bucks right away. Well, and I tell the story 100 times, right? I went after bucks and I passed a lot of deer and I passed a lot of does, and I should have shot more animals so that I was comfortable shooting animals. Well, now I've learned from that, and I got to put my son to get comfortable around deer. And I think that's where I went wrong right away, was even with a doe, I would get so jacked up because I hadn't shot a ton of does when I was 26, right? Like I shot some deer, but not a ton. And I would still get shaky and stuff and not have my composure. But I think if you're, my son is 11 now, and when I take him out there, he's already got a deer under his belt. So maybe a little bit of the pressure kind of goes away, and I keep him shooting guns. No, I take him down to the shooting range, and I keep shooting with him and all of that stuff. And I think the more that I do that, the more comfortable he'll be around deer. And if it's brown, it's down for the next 5 years, however many seasons. And then once we get into a time where he's like, I really would like a buck right now, then we'll go and do that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I like that approach. Cause I think regardless, like, you know, the more deer you shoot, eventually he's going to be like, all right, what else is out there?
Yeah.
Is there a bigger one out? Yeah,
exactly.
That'll come naturally. Totally.
And then maybe he starts to understand deer movement a little bit, and maybe he understands like, hey, why did this doe come out here? Right. And you start thinking about that. And then there's a lot of what I understand as a father or a mentor to a younger hunter is that they have a lot of questions. And in that period of time, over the next handful of years, my job is to answer those questions. And so that's what I want. That's what I want to do. I want to be the guy who helps him answer the questions and gets him, like, helps him become a better deer hunter.
For sure.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, buddy. Good conversation today. All over the place.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the title, is all over the place. What do you think? Is that a good title?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I think
either this that is, or Dan's dog trauma or something.
Dude, and maybe subconsciously, that's still something in my life that has affected who I am to the core. And I need to see a therapist about it or something like that.
Maybe. That was a wild generation.
Just
Iowa,
like,
man.
No emotions. Like,
yeah, none.
Didn't cry, didn't say I love you, like nothing like that. Right.
Nope.
Crazy. But this is also, as far as the schedule is concerned, the last spring session episode, because next week is June. So technically it's not really spring anymore. So I just want to say shout out to Pierce for taking time, you know, however many weeks we did this, 5 weeks or something like that, five or six weeks.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you very much for taking time to BS with me on these episodes and shoot from the hip. There's not a ton of things to turkey season's over, right? I don't want to talk about like hardcore strategy right now because it's not what's on the
five on places your trail cams need to be for rut success. Yep.
Put your tree stand here for the best year ever.
Yeah, exactly.
So
no, dude, this has been awesome, man. I appreciate you having me on for the spring sessions, dude. This has been a blast, and we still need to get together for a coffee and do an episode.
We're going to do that this summer at some point once the kids are out of school and there's a little bit more freedom in the schedule and things just, they don't settle down. There's just a little bit more of a breath.
Yep.
In the day. So, dude, shout out to Pierce. If you guys live in Wisconsin or hunt or fish in Wisconsin, I strongly, strongly suggest checking out the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast. Tons of great content, whether you're looking for fishing or turkey or hunting. You do a lot of natural resource stuff. I've noticed over the past handful of episodes, you're talking with the Department of Natural Resources a lot. Tons of great content over there. And you can find that on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you download your podcast, it's going to be there. Also, go check out the Nine Finger Chronicles as far as subscribe to it. Get that content coming directly to you. If you like it, go leave a 5-star review. Let everybody know that I'm a weirdo, and sometimes society likes weirdos, man. So shout out to all the weirdos out there. Good vibes, everybody. Pierce, thanks again, man. And we'll talk to you guys when we talk to you guys.